Okay, this is side number two, tape number one. Side number two, tape number one, interview with Vivian Sims. We're at her home in Oakland, California now. Just before I turn the tape over, you mentioned you received a telegram from Mr. Putnam asking you to report to the airport, to the same place that you worked before, and he wanted you to be there about a day before Amelia was
there,
due back.
Oh, yes.
And you had received a telegram, received permission from your new boss at the Bates Valve Bag Company to do this. And you were driving home and listening to your car radio?
No, I came home on the bus, and as I got off the bus, I worked in Emeryville, and I got off the bus in town to transfer to the bus out to East Oakland.
See, this would have been Friday night, about 5:30 or something.
Yeah,
like
something
that.
Like that. I think she was due in Monday. And I can't remember exact dates, but I believe I was to report there Monday. And I know it was a terrible shock.
And what did you hear?
Well, I saw the headlines, Amelia Earhart lost at sea. And, of course, I didn't feel like I should call over there. I knew that he would be just jam with calls, and I sent him a telegram.
A call where?
To the airport to talk
was
to Mr. Putnam.
Then?
I believe he was, yes. I'm not sure, but I remember I sent him a wire over there. And ask if I could be of any help at all, and I never heard from him again.
He never contacted
no.
you?
No. I saw him again, but didn't realize I was seeing him.
When was that?
Well, many years after that, I think it was in 1950, my husband and I were driving in from Las Vegas through the desert, and I stopped at Furnace Creek, is the name of it, and that was a they were just opening for the season that day, and they didn't have a cook or anything. And I can't remember anybody else being there but this gentleman. And he said, well, he would fix us. We wanted to have lunch. He said he'd fix a sandwich and cup of coffee for us. And it bothered me all through the lunch, and his face was familiar. I couldn't put a name to it. And all the way home, I thought about it. I can't figure out who that man is. I know I've seen him before. And it wasn't very long after that where I saw something in the paper about him managing or owning this resort at Furnace Creek. And there was Mr. Putnam, and I didn't even know it.
I just fell off.
No. Well, it was many years. It was in 50.
Years,
yeah.
He died in 1950.
He did? He died that year. I'll be darned.
He was managing, he and his wife, Peg Putnam, or Margaret, were running Furnace Creek Inn at that time.
Well, she owned it, did she?
No,
they were just managing it.
No, they owned it.
Oh, yeah,
getting back to their takeoff, you got to watch the takeoff from Oakland in March.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And, were you with GP when you watched, or do you remember where you were when you watched the takeoff?
Just out on the field. I don't think I was with anyone particular. There was a crowd around, you know, the newspaper people, and we were all out there kind of together. I remember I was standing near Mr. Miller, because I was so thrilled. I remember the tears came to my eyes, and he looked over at me and kind of grinned, you know, like he's sissy you. That I remember.
Mr. Miller was quite a nice fellow. Didn't
he? Yeah, he was a very nice person. I heard from him every year. I'd get a Christmas card after that. And then during the war, they stopped coming. And I thought, well, I guess he was killed in the war or something. But I found out later that Mr. Gerner told me that he died of a heart attack. He was a very nice chap.
Did he ever talk to you about his earlier days out in the Pacific Ocean?
Yes. That he had, I wish I could remember, Holland Island, and he had made that out for air strip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a picture of him.
He and a fellow worker of his named Bob Campbell.
No, I don't remember the name. I had a picture of him on Holland, autographed picture of him. That went too with all my mementos.
Well,
hello, Pup Cat.
Did you think that Amelia was a little too good to be true?
No, she didn't strike me that way. I just thought she was a very brilliant woman. She was outstanding. She was way above the average, but I would say she was too good to be true. How do you mean this?
Well, I talked to people who knew her. I've never talked to anyone who worked under her before, except for mechanic Bo McNeely.
He was a nice chap. I liked him. Yes.
Now, he was kind of a little bit about your age. I think good thing you were married, because he was out there trying to see what he could do in the field.
Well, he was a little younger than me, I think. Very handsome chap, and real nice. I remember he took me out there one day and let me look into the cockpit and the whole thing. He was a real nice chap.
I want to ask you something that I have never been able to really tie down. In Amelia's airplane, in her cockpit, they had recently installed down in Burbank this Bendix direction finder and receiver. Mm-hmm. And in the process of installing it, I have plenty of pictures that show the direction finder right up on top of the cockpit. But I have never been able to find a picture to show where the receiver was in the cockpit, whether it was sitting between the two seats, or I've never found a picture.
I wouldn't know, because I wouldn't know what to look for. All I saw was a bunch of dials, you know.
All
and,
over the place.
Yeah, and what did it mean to me? She called it her flying laboratory, and she was partially financed by the college, was this?
Pennsylvania U, State U.
No.
Purdue.
Purdue, yeah. Yeah. And I know she enjoyed calling it her flying lab.
She what?
Enjoyed calling
she
it her.
She liked
to
call it.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You remember what color her eyes were?
I think they were blue. Her hair was toffee colored.
Toffee. T-O-F-F-E.
Uh-huh.
Toffee colored.
Yeah.
More brown than...
Well, it was between a brown and a blonde. She wasn't a blonde. She, like Kathy. Toffee or Kathy, whatever you say. That would be my description.
Well, I remember we used to pull taffy that
yeah.
kind of a toffee
uh-huh.
color.
Yeah.
Kind of like a, you know, it's too bad that that was before the days of color photography.
Yes.
And they used to paint things. But do you remember something about her airplane that very few people ever mention, because they don't really know, and all they've ever seen is black and white pictures? Her airplane wasn't just aluminum. It had color to it.
I don't remember having color.
It's but all the photographs of it, the color was kind of a reddish orange, and it shows up.
No.
It shows up as gray on the structure. No, just
know.
The leading edge of the wings and the top of the tail was that way. The rest
Isn't
of the
funny?
Airplane
I don't
was
recall
all
that at all.
I know very.
All I can recall is this silver bird. It was so beautiful. I just was so thrilled with it.
All of the reporters at the time reported that right after takeoff, the airplane seemed to almost settle back into the ground.
I don't recall that at all.
I don't either. I noticed the newspapers had that in it at the time, but
to me, it was like a bird just soaring, and I was just thrilled. As I say, the sun broke through and shined on that plane. It just was a tremendous thing.
Did you stay up that night listening to radio reports of her progress across the
Pacific? No. Mm-mm. I don't recall that. I may have. I don't recall it.
Did you stay on? Well, you stayed on until after she crashed
in
Loop Field.
Right.
Do you remember anything about those times? Do you remember?
All I can remember is Mr. Putnam being so white and so tense and pacing and pacing and pacing and chewing gum.
And chewing gum?
Could, yeah.
Did he smoke at all?
I don't recall that.
I know Amelia didn't smoke.
I don't recall that she did, no.
Did he drink at all?
I never knew him to drink. He may have, but I never knew him to.
Did he ever play a practical joke on you?
No.
Do you remember any practical jokes he ever played
no,
on you?
Did I don't
you
recall.
Know he was a practical joker?
I have heard since, but I didn't know.
I don't know how many of those stories are true, but for instance...
What used to... Excuse me.
Go ahead. No, I never want to interrupt you.
What tickled me, he would call... I know there was no real gay connotation about him at all, but he would call men dear. And that used to kind of amuse me, you know, like friends of his. And that always amused me. Not often, but once in a while. But I don't think he was a homosexual. I never saw any other indication. I don't know, it's just an amusing thing, a trait he had.
Well, I've interviewed all of his wives, except Amelia. And they're all very interesting women. They're all strong women. Every single woman he ever married was a brilliant, strong woman.
Imagine one if that would be attractive to him.
His first wife, Dorothy Binney, is still alive. In fact, all of his wives are still
mm-hmm.
alive.
They must be at quite an age.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dorothy is. That was his first wife.
Mm-hmm.
And they were married in 1915, and they were married clear up till 1930, 1929, mm-hmm. And she lives in Florida, and she doesn't have anything very nice to say about him.
Really?
But she is an extremely strong, very wealthy woman, too,
mm-hmm.
and always has been. That's where the money... Did you know that he was not a wealthy man?
No. I had no idea of his finances at all. I knew he was a publisher. I just had a feeling that that was where his money came from. That was my impression, but I had no way of knowing.
Did he ever tell you, did he ever intimate to you that he was wealthy?
No. No, it was kind of understood. He was a publisher. I figured all publishers must be wealthy.
Well, when he paid for his evening meal, he didn't usually know where he was going to get the money for his breakfast meal. He didn't have a dime, neither did Amelia.
Really? Well, I had no idea.
Amelia wrote that she had to mortgage her future, but then that's what futures were for, and she was correct. They were operating on borrowed money and everything. They didn't have anything.
Well, I know she had made commitments electric commitments.
Big what?
Electric, yes. Mm-hmm. And I think she was like orange juice. She was going to endorse different things like that. And, of course, the covers, I don't know whether, I guess they would have received the money from the covers. I don't know.
Yes, the covers were donated more or less to the cost of the flight. They were all spent, both the first set of covers and the last set.
Uh-huh.
And there were 6,000 covers altogether. By the way, I wanted to ask you, to your knowledge, do you believe that those covers are on the airplane?
Well, I know that they went out the ones that were in our office went out on our first flight, our first takeoff. Yes, they were loaded on there, I know. I had every indication that they were, unless somebody took them out of the office and threw them in an ash can someplace on the way to the plane. It was just prior to the takeoff.
The reason I asked that is because the weight was such a problem and
mm-hmm.
everything. They were supposedly in the nose of the airplane. I have an inventory that was done by a lieutenant in the Army at the time, Luke Field, and he was made responsible for the airplane after it crashed,
mm-hmm.
and he took an inventory of everything on the airplane and everything, and he inventoried every pencil, how much eraser was left on the pencil. I mean, this guy, he was really serious
mm-hmm.
about his inventory, and if he was going to be responsible for it, he was going to put it down in writing what it was. And he listed every single thing, every book, how many pages were in it. It was the greatest thing that ever happened because it told me everything was in that airplane, all the serial numbers and everything. Well, he never listed any covers. And this is why I wonder And yet I don't remember anyone ever mentioned that Amelia took them back with her on the ship. She came back to, on the Malolo, back to Los Angeles. And she didn't bring them back with her, and yet he didn't list them as being on the airplane. I wondered where they are.
Well, I didn't see them actually loaded, but it was my impression they were removed from the office and
taken to the airplane.
Yeah, okay. That was my impression.
Stranger things have happened, and they just put them in a closet somewhere, and when the airplane gets back, why, they say, oh, here they are. They've been around the world.
That's happened before, huh?
Oh, things like that have happened before. Well, can you remember any little incidents or anything to just add personal touches to either GP, yourself, or Amelia?
I'm afraid I can't tell you very much.
Do you remember Amelia's mother afterwards?
No.
She lived here in Berkeley, you know, for many years. She died here. Well, I don't know if she died in Berkeley, but she lived many years right here in Berkeley.
Yeah, I understood she did, but I don't remember ever meeting her at the airport. I don't remember ever meeting her.
Did you ever meet Amelia's stepson, David?
Don't remember.
He lived in Florida at the time, Fort Pierce, Florida.
Was he? Did he come up for our first takeoff?
No, no.
Well, then I never met him.
Okay. He came out here immediately as soon as he heard. He got on an airplane and flew out as immediately they heard she was down and met his father here in San Francisco and spent the next 3 weeks with his father. And I just wondered if you'd ever met him.
Because as I say, I never saw Mr. Putnam after she crashed until the day at Furnace Creek and didn't know who I was seeing.
And that's great.
Yeah, I was so sorry afterward.
And he hadn't changed that much,
no,
really.
No, he hadn't, but...
He was a little heavier and a little stooped.
I knew that I knew it, but I just didn't put a name to him. I'd be the last person I would expect to find making a sandwich for us for lunch.
That's beautiful.
You didn't make milk and drop back down here the next week and see?
Huh?
You didn't make milk and drop back down here?
No, I didn't, honey.
Long ways out there to Furnace Creek.
You know, it's a wonder. You've asked that because I tell them things about myself. I was very impulsive. I've learned I've mellowed a lot since. I told him things about, you know, like Milton painting a room, and I hated the color. I had to get right in and repaint it right now. He says he wonders if he would do it. He did it, though, didn't you, dear, with the bathroom, so you found out. But I was more impulsive.
I never painted it. I just started.
Well, anyhow, he can't imagine me being as impulsive, and I guess maybe demanding too. But as you get older, you realize your mistakes and you know a little bit.
Can you think of what do you think of Mrs. Bolam in New Jersey as being Amelia Earhart, as claimed by the Faust book?
No, I just don't believe this. And I know what her sister thinks about this story, and she's very hurt about it. And I can't believe it.
Have you ever met her sister?
No.
Have you
just
ever
heard about
her?
No. I've just heard about her.
I'm almost tempted. It's a little late back there now. That's only 7:30. Would you like to talk to her?
Yes, but what would I say to the poor woman? Maybe it would bring up
You know what? You know
hurt.
What happened? No, you wouldn't bring up any hurts. You would be amazed. You would think you were talking to Amelia. She sounds like her. You know, of course, it's 40 years later now.
Yeah.
But she talks like her. She has the same inflections. You know, Amelia had a kind of an odd way of talking. How would you describe that?
You know, I can't remember her voice. She was kind of, I can't think of the word I want. Rapidly. She spoke rapidly. And jerky. That isn't the word I want. But similar to the word I want. I can't think.
had an odd cadence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The rhythm was different than most people.
Yes, it was. But, you know, I can't recall the tone at all. I don't think I would recognize it.
Did she ever strike you as being very deferential to working women?
No, not necessarily. She just was pleasant to me as a person. She treated her mechanic with kindness and respect and appreciation. She showed appreciation for anyone that was working for her. And which I like, because you don't often see this. And especially as someone as famous as she is.
Did you at the time think that your salary was low, right on, or high?
I thought it was just about to...
Right on?
Yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh.
Everything considered about right on?
Oh, yes. I was very pleased. As I said, that I would, if I had known what it was going to really mean, I would have worked for nothing. But, of course, I took my salary. It was an adventure.
Well, this is an amazing thing. You know, people think, gee, when a movie star goes to stay at a hotel, they probably don't present them with a bill. Oh, yes, they do. They charge them for everything, just like
and then some, else. I guess, because they figure they can afford
they
it.
They ought to get a big tip, too. Anyone who's ever been any kind of a celebrity knows that you don't get anything.
No,
sir. Yeah. They get charged just like everybody else when they go to a restaurant. In fact, the waiter expects a little bigger tip.
Well, surely, because they figure they have the money.
And Amelia and GP had to pay for everything. But you don't really believe then, or I don't, but where's your problem? Let me put it this way. Do you have any opinion about whether Amelia was supposedly on some sort of a spy mission or anything like that?
At that time, I had no suspicion of it. The only, after Fugger's book, it made sense that it could have happened, because, as I say, Bill Miller working with them, and in confidence, and I wasn't in on the laying out of the itinerary. They had meetings together that I wasn't invited in on. I don't know what happened, what was talked about. And so it made sense that it could possibly, excuse me, what happened, hon?
What captain?
She what?
Oh, she's into my suitcase.
Oh. I thinking back on it, it's possible. At that time, I had no indication because I was on the surface of things. I was having too good a time.
Do you remember a Mr. Williams?
The name strikes me.
Well,
I
see,
can't,
that's too many William T's.
I can't.
Let me put it a different way. Do you remember there was a man down in Los Angeles, California, who made all her maps for her?
I don't recall.
His name was Strong, or that was his middle name. Actually, I'm having a tough time remembering his name right now, too. Mm. Okay.
I don't remember who prepared the maps, or where they came from, or I don't remember anything of that kind.
Okay.
Just know they happened.
Do you remember anything about Mr. Noonan? I have indications. Of course, this was just before the flight departed from Oakland, up until the time they got back into Los Angeles on the Malolo after the crack-up.
Mm-hmm.
That from the time that Mr. Noonan arrived on the scene, Captain Manning was not very happy.
Mr. Noonan was there first. Captain Manning came in after Mr. Noonan was there. That's the way I remember. And I don't remember any hard feelings at all between the two of them. Seemed to me they all got along well, even with Paul Mance. I didn't like Paul Mance, didn't like his personality at all. Didn't appeal to me at all.
I mean, you didn't think Mr. Mance was a ladies' man?
I just didn't like him. He was very arrogant. He was very self-important. No, I didn't catch that about him because he just ignored me. I was just hired help to Paul. So maybe that's why I didn't like him, because he wasn't pleasant to me.
Did anybody get along with him? How about Bo McNeely? All right.
I never saw anybody not get along. It wasn't a question of not getting along. It was just his arrogant attitude. I didn't like. And maybe I mistook his attitude. Maybe I just picked it up wrong. I don't know. But that was the impression I got, and I just didn't like the man.
I want to ask you: do you remember if Mr. Manning got along with him?
I don't recall it. Anybody else having that feeling? Of course, I never spoke to anyone about it, never commented. Naturally, the secretary doesn't comment on anything like that. She feels, you know.
Secretaries usually know what's going on.
Yeah, you. But I don't recall any friction at
did
all.
Did you feel that Amelia and Paul were close friends or just business acquaintances?
Business acquaintances was my impression. I was amazed that they... brought out a romance between them in the picture. That to me was strictly fiction, because there was no indication of that at all.
Were you aware that Amelia was named correspondent in Paul Mance's divorce previous to that?
No. Mm-mm.
She was, and that was one of the reasons why Terry Mance, his fiance, was being sent ahead to Hawaii. GP wasn't about to let Amelia and Paul go off.
Well, that's news to me, because I...
it was all arranged for well ahead of time. It wasn't anything done on the spur of the moment.
No, I thought this was just fiction that they brought in to make the movie more interesting.
Paul's first wife's name is Myrtle, and Myrtle smelled smoke. But she got the wrong fire. It wasn't Amelia, it was Terry.
Oh, I
and,
see.
Terry and Paul had been panking around for a long time. But this I got from Terry. But Myrtle didn't know anything about Terry, and so she thought it must have been Amelia. So she named Amelia in her divorce. And
what a shame.
Amelia didn't say a word. She just let it all hang out, and it all came to a big nothing because there wasn't anything to come to. She knew that's the way it would end. And that was her style. Just she couldn't be responsible for what other people thought. Let it go like that. Anyway, getting back to that first flight, do you know of anything that was given to the press that was not true, or any information that was not given to the press? Do you know of anything like that that they kept secret?
Not to my knowledge.
It was all pretty much open and above. The things like the covers not being on board.
First indication.
Oh, I had no indication. No, I'm not saying it. I just know that sort of thing could have happened. And you might have been in a position to say, oh, yeah, they took those sacks and GP took them home with him, and so he'd have them ready when they got back or something like
that. No, I missed even that very that thought that you say this has happened before. You see how naive I am?
Yeah,
and I was very naive in those days, so.
But I have no reason to believe that they're not there. The only thing is that if the airplane is located, the covers aren't on board, somebody's going to know, well, where are the covers?
Yes.
You know, and who knows?
Do you have a pretty good indication where you think it might be?
I'll soon get through this, which we're just about finished here. Well, I'll tell you what happened that day. You'll be surprised. You won't be surprised, because it's probably just about what you figured happened anyway. Remember Commander Ragsdale?
No.
Ever heard that name?
I've heard the name, but I don't. Everything is blurred. And there's so many names in connection with it that...
Commander Ragsdale was the commanding officer of the U.S. Naval Reserve Squadron, which was down in Hangar 5 at the time. And this is where Amelia kept her airplane. And in fact, just before the departure that day, they were using Commander Ragsdale's office, which is on the second floor on the runway of the hangar, on the ramp side of the hangar. And she and GP were up there to stay away from the newsstand and whatnot, because it was in the naval area and they were able to keep them isolated. And
excuse me, please. Dear, would you bring me some ice water?
I'm not tiring you, I hope.
I'm getting a little bit tired, but it's almost finished.
Yeah. But you don't command. Well, Commander Ragsdale, Commander Ragsdale passed away now. What I was wondering about was why Commander Ragsdale offered the hangar facilities and his office to Amelia and her husband rather than.
I wasn't even aware, or I don't remember that I was aware that there was that meeting. Was Miller supposed to have been with him?
Miller would have arranged all this because Amelia and GP were known at the White House. The White House had issued orders, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt had issued orders to the Chief of Naval Operations to cooperate in any way that was reasonable with Amelia's effort to fly around the world. And of course, Mr. Miller had gotten orders from Eugene Vidal to help her in any way that he could. Were you aware that Mr. Miller was going down to Australia and New Zealand for the purpose? What purpose he was going down?
I think he was going to be there when she came on her way back. I can't remember. I remember his office was off of the office I worked in. And I came in once for lunch, and I overheard a phone call. He was talking to Washington and talking about being in Australia and New Zealand. And I can't remember the gist of it, but I did hear something. And when he hung up and realized that I was in the office, he called me in and said, did you hear the conversation? And I said, yes, I walked in when you were. And he says, do you know what I said? Do you remember what I said? Well, I said, I wasn't paying any attention. I just heard you mention New Zealand and Australia, that you would be there. And he says, I don't want that repeated to anyone. And
okay,
I said,
okay, now that
I didn't.
Was before the first flight.
Yes.
Okay. Now you realize there is no way that he could have gotten to New Zealand and Australia before she got there because she was taken off.
But it was coming back, wasn't it? She going to come back there?
She had gone right on through Australia. And 3 days later, she'd have left Australia and been on her way. That's all right. I know why he was there. In fact, I know every hotel he stayed in and everybody he's talked to, and I can follow his movements for every minute that he was in Australia and New Zealand because of the New Zealand and Australian press at the time. He was there for the purpose of negotiating bilateral air agreements between the United Kingdom, Australia and New Zealand for Pan-American survey flights through the Pacific. You may not remember, but the original Pan-American flights down to Samoa and New Zealand happened just at the time that Amelia was making these flights. And
no, I wasn't aware of any of that.
And that was the start of our, as a matter of fact, kind of a point in history. You took quite a part in aviation history that you don't really know about. And in fact, this is a story that's never been told, and we should be putting it all on tape. But that's very interesting. Do you remember what Mr. Miller usually wore? What kind of clothes he usually wore?
Conservative.
Did he have
dress,
a particular way of dressing?
A business suit, as far as I remember.
Do you remember any particular color?
I think gray. It's hard to remember back, but. And I close my eyes and think about him, I see a gray suit on him. The picture I had of him in Holland, though, he just had a white shirt and trousers, socks. But, no, he always wore a coat, conservatively dressed. Mr. Putnam was always well-dressed, too.
Mr. Putnam always wore glasses, didn't he?
It seems to me they were pinched.
Right.
I think so. Yes.
Did he wear them in a thing around his neck? Or
no, I don't think so.
He wore your glasses too before.
I got a
question for you. Way out in left field. Did you ever wonder how Amelia Earhart could fly that airplane for 13, 15 hours and never go to the bathroom?
That never occurred to me. No, That never occurred to me. Like now, but...
He was human, just like everybody else.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Do you remember any delay caused in the flight departure from Oakland, or at least a last-minute rhubarb over a piece of equipment that they had to...
All I can remember is problems with the radio.
They were held up a little while looking for the door between the cockpit and the cabin.
I don't remember that.
They forgot that. With those other three guys on board, she had to have some way to close off that cockpit.
I'll be darned. No, I don't recall that at all.
Yeah, they'd taken the door out, and then they had to put it back together, and they had to find the door and stick it in there.
That would be interesting.
Well, that's all here and there. Mr. Putnam was quite upset when she cracked up then.
Oh, yes. Very much so. I know he didn't want to talk. He just wanted to be by himself, pace up and down, pace up and down. And I thought that most of the newspaper people respected that. And I know there were a couple that were, I thought, quite rude, and they kept wanting me to ask, they kept asking his reactions, what did he say, and, you know, kept pushing it, pushing it, pushing it. And I was very sympathetic toward him at the time, and it kind of bothered me that they would be that rude, but I guess that's their job.
Yeah, it's their job. They're that way, too. When he called you to come back to work for him, did he call you at home?
No, he sent me a wire.
He sent you a wire?
Yes.
Okay. And he asked you to report to the office at such a date if you could. Yes. Did you answer his wire?
No, I don't think I did. I don't know. I think it was understood, but if I couldn't, I would let him know.
What did he call you?
Mrs. Mata.
Mrs. Mata?
Mm-hmm.
Did you, when you signed letters, did you sign them GPPVM, you know, like...
You mean the initials in the corner? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so anything with VM would be something you had done.
Right.
Okay. And I'll run through some. I have thousands of letters and whatnot.
Well, you might find some.
When I come to VM, I'll run off some copies and send them to you, because you'll know you did them.
Right. And he dictated parts of the book shoot that he was writing about. It was that very vague. From messages that she had sent, I remember, it's funny, I remember Cumulus Clouds. And what book would that be?
That was Last Flight they were married.
That's it.
Well, they didn't call it Last Flight, did they? You remember what they called it?
No.
They called it World Flight. And it was only changed to Last Flight.
I knew what the title was going to be. It wasn't Last Flight. Well, some of that I know that I typed up. Some of that. It seems to me. Oh no, I can't say it because I don't remember.
Well, they were preparing the book in advance, so it's very possible. Is there anything you would like to say in regards to anything in regards to this whatsoever?
The only thing I can say that it was a tremendous adventure, and it was a terrible shock to me that she was lost. I respected her greatly. And I don't know what else I can say about it.
What do you think happened?
I don't know. After reading Mr. Gerner's book, I thought she might have gotten off course and gone down and was captured. And I still think that's very possible. I know that the island she was supposed to reach was very small, and it's like a dot in a vast expanse, and whether they got lost, what happened, I don't know.
Did Mr. Miller ever give any ideas?
I never saw Mr. Miller again. You see, he had left for Hawaii right after she took off. And I never saw him again. I just heard from him. I got a note from him from, can't remember if it was Australia or New Zealand. a little note.
But that was before she was lost.
Yeah, oh yes, yes. And then after that, all I ever got was Christmas cards, you know. Greetings, hope you're well, or something like that. That's all. So I never saw him or talked to him again.
Okay. I thank you very, very much.
Yeah, you're most welcome.
Okay, that concludes the interview with Vivian Sims, who was Amelia Earhart's and George Palmer Putnam's secretary on a temporary basis in Oakland, California, in the latter part of February and March 1937. Her name at that time was Vivian Mata. And the interview was concluded at their home in Oakland, California. Her name is now Vivian Martha Sims. And it was concluded late in the afternoon of Thursday, March 10th, 1977. And this concludes the end of this tape.